Good morning. Welcome to presentation. Father and daughter were going fishing, and the father promptly put a nice juicy worm on his hook and cast out there into the pond. And the daughter got her fishing pole and looked at her hook. It was a nice shiny hook. And she cast hers out there with that shiny hook. After a while, the father had caught a fish, and he reeled it in and asked his daughter if she's had any bites or nibbles, anything. She said, no. And he said, well, what do you have for bait? She said, I've got a really shiny, nice-looking hook out there. And she reeled it in, and she held it up. See that? That's a nice-looking hook. Look at that thing. It glimmers in the sun. It really catches your eye. Don't you think the fish would just go crazy over that? Her dad said, no, the fish like worms. Worms? Ew! Nothing. If you want to catch a fish, you got to put a worm on it. A worm? She wasn't very interested in fishing anymore all of a sudden. Finally, her dad convinced her, no, if you want to catch a fish, you got to put bait on that hook that looks good to the fish, not to the little girl. Very bravely, she put a worm on there. And lo and behold, she caught a fish. So, now you have to help me. What is the purpose of presentation? What is the purpose of presentation?
So somebody will learn something.
Well, my next question kind of sends you down a little different bunny trail here. Why do stores and restaurants focus on making their items appealing? Did you ever see a picture of a Big Mac that looks like the one that you really get in the package? It was all wrapped up and been warmed for 3 hours before you got to it. You ever see a picture like that? You're not going to. Why do they present things so that it's appealing to you?
They want you to buy it.
They want you to buy it because they want to what?
Snag your attention.
They want to snag your attention, and then they want to... You're helping me. Keep it up.
Snag your money.
They've got something to sell, right? We have something to sell as teachers. It's one of the most valuable things anymore. It's called information. Any more information makes billions of dollars every year. If you don't believe me, just look at Mr. Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, okay? He sells information. That's how he makes his money. So, the purpose of presentation is to get your attention and then to sell something. That's the basic idea. We want to get there. What is the enemy of presentation? What is the enemy of presentation? Let me ask you a question. If a preacher is preaching, what is the congregation trying not to do? Get distracted. Thank you. The enemy of presentation is distraction. That's why when you go to McDonald's, they don't have signs up there advertising Burger King. Okay? They don't want you to decide that you'd rather not be there. They want to hook you. They want to keep you there until you've bought something. All right? And we're going to talk about some of that too. Next question, what are the three steps that make a good presentation? This is the point of this presentation. Okay? We're going to work together to describe them. So the goal of my presentation this morning is to identify and discuss three steps for catching students. All right, here they are. And I'm going to say them three different ways to try to catch you. All right, the first one is the bait, or we might call it the introduction. What is the point of that? It is to get their attention. You've got to grab it somehow. Okay. The next thing is the bite or the explanation. That's, when someone's trying to sell a car, you go to a car lot, what do they offer? What does a car lot let you do?
Test drive.
Test drive. Why? Why do they want you to test drive the car? They want to hook you. They want to convince you. Okay. As teachers, we give our students that test drive during class period. we're giving them the explanation, but we're letting them test drive the information that we're giving them. That's the explanation. And the point of the test drive is to keep you. You'd pulled into the car lot because that car looked really nice from the road, right? That was when they caught your attention. Now they're going to keep your attention, and then they've got you. That's the catch. That's when the student is actually applying what he knows. That's when you drive out of the parking lot with that car, right? You're applying that sale. You've got it now. And this is, at this point, you've already got their attention. You kept their attention. And now all you're doing is telling them which way to go to leave the car lot. Okay? You're just guiding that attention the right way. Our takeaway for today is that the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. And when we say cause, that means that you need to be willing to use whatever means necessary to make that student learn. Because if they're not learning, you are teaching. I don't care how good looking your car is. I don't care how nice a test drive your person has. If he doesn't buy the car, you're not a very good car salesman. I don't care how good the picture is of your burger. If it tastes horrible, nobody's going to come back for the second one. Okay? Point is, if your students aren't learning, our success rate as teachers has nothing to do with how many years we've taught. It has nothing to do with how well your walls are decorated, how well you know your material, or even how good a person you are. I hate to tell you that, but your success rate has nothing to do with any of that. Your success rate is strictly measured by how much and how well your students have learned. If you measure yourself by anything else, you're looking at the wrong thing. You've got to look at whether your students are learning or not. During some research this summer, I spoke with a criminal lawyer, and we were discussing the methods that prosecuting attorneys and probation officers will use in reducing a criminal's sentence or the things that he's going to be charged with. And he told me something that opened my eyes up about, have you ever heard the saying that you're going to own up to what you did? Right? He said when a criminal, when the district attorney comes to a criminal and says, okay, we have a deal for you, what he wants that criminal to do is to own his crime. In other words, if Ben stole my car, he wants Ben to say, I stole Jonah's car. Nobody made me do it. I just really wanted to play a trick on him. It was really funny to see the look on his face, you know, and everything. But I did it. And I own that crime. It's no one else's fault. It's mine. Okay? This morning, I want you to own your job as a teacher, which is to cause your students to learn. It's on the first day of school, that becomes your crime. Okay? That you have to make these students learn. I want it to become yours for you to take that up. A quote from a man named Patrick White, I forget what I was taught. I only remember what I learned. Your students are going to say the same thing. They don't care what you teach. They're only going to remember what they learned. So the point is that unless you're making them learn, you're not teaching. To teach, the teacher must cause the students to learn. The teacher is responsible if the student is not learning. And just give me a little bit. I'm going to qualify that statement a little bit. But basically, that's the truth. The teacher controls the subject, the style, and the speaker. Therefore, the teacher has not only the ability but also the responsibility to change the subject, improve the style, and inspire the speaker to equip the student. Now, I told you that the teacher is responsible if the student is not learning. Students often learn in a three steps forward, two steps backward pattern, okay? So don't feel bad if that happens in your classroom. A-plus students are rather rare. It's okay if your students aren't A-plus students. The point is that they are learning. They're actually improving. Their knowledge at the end of the week is better than it was at the beginning. But not all students are going to respond in that way. And we can't be, I don't want you to feel guilty if you have a Judas in your classroom, because Jesus had one. And he was the master teacher. But don't use that for an excuse. All right? So when I say that the teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn, that is a statement that's as true as saying that any time that you hold fire up to paper, it will burn. Anyone know the two exceptions to that? Well, if I dumped this Mountain Dew over this paper, would it burn? There's one exception. The other one is, in the absence of oxygen, paper won't burn. It doesn't matter what you do to it. Okay? To teach, the teacher must not only present new concepts and processes, but also, and this is really what teaching is, it's changing the way the student thinks and the way that they respond to life. To teach is to change lives for the good of the person being taught. So this morning, if I don't teach for your good, then I'm wasting my time and yours too. So I hope I'm helping you. To teach is to cause the student to apply knowledge, to recreate in their own understanding a new idea or truth. Unless they get it in their own mind, you didn't make it there. To teach is to cause the student to apply. And unless they're going to apply what you teach them, you're wasting your time. How do we get a student to apply a new concept? First, we have to get their attention. And how do we do that? We're going to talk about that in just a minute. You're up. Any questions on anything that I've said? Anything to add to my introduction here? I will be giving you all plenty of chances to talk, so if you have questions, be ready to fire them at me. Anybody? If not, we're going to go to our first point, and that is the bait, or the introduction, that part of your teaching in which you get your students' attention. I'm going to be using the example of Jesus and the woman at the well. In this, Jesus did this very effectively. What did he do? He sat on the well. Your bait must appeal to your group. Remember that little girl who was fishing and who had to put a gooey, ooey worm on the hook so she could catch a fish? Because her bait had to appeal to her students. Brother Jay this morning was talking about being able to relate to your students, use examples that relate to their life. Your teaching must appeal to your students or you're wasting your time. Jesus was sitting here on the well, and this lady was coming to get
water.
She was already thirsty. So he was doing something that was going to appeal to her. He got her attention. Sell yourself. Every sales book you're ever going to read is going to tell you this. Brother Paul talked about this yesterday, about the clothes make the man, and so on. Dress for success. For those of you teaching lower grades, dress in bright clothes. Those lower grade students really like bright colors. Upper grades, you might want to wear some darker clothes so they get the idea that you're like in authority or something. But dress for success. Use active posture. The enemy of teaching is something called a chair. If you need to get down on the student's level, what you should actually do is come up close to them and go down on one knee, all right? And that allows you to get on eye level, even with a very small student, and get intimate with them without taking away from an active posture. Make eye contact. I appreciate all of you who are looking at me. It's scary for me, but It's good. Teachers need to get good at looking people in the eyes, okay? You don't want to look at them too long or they're going to get a little bit nervous, but that's okay. Move. Walk around. Gesture. Notice something about teachers, and just forgive me if you don't make this mistake, but for some reason, I've seen lots of teachers who gesture, but their elbows are stuck to their sides, so all their gestures are like this. Go ahead and stretch your arms out. Your students want to see you moving. Gesture. Don't worry about pointing, okay? It's okay in the classroom. That's fine. We waste a lot of breath talking when we could be gesturing, okay? For example, I want you all to count. So please pay very close attention. Are you all ready? Okay, here we go. 10. 20. 30. I said one word and you all counted to 39. Wow. Smile. And long before Thanksgiving. In fact, meet your students at the door with a smile on the first day of school. Thank you to Conrad for instructing us in that yesterday. Okay, now I'm going to have the third bench on this side come up here, please, with me. All right? And your responsibility is going to come up here, turn around, and smile. Nice, big, bright smiles. Come around that way, if you would, please. All you have to do is come up here and turn around and smile at everyone. Let everyone see your beautiful faces, okay? Good job. Thank you. You get to go sit down. Congratulations. You're my first helpers here. Invite your students. Use welcoming body language. Ben, you can come up here with me now. Okay? All right, and you get to choose someone else, and you can motion for them to come up here. Thank you. Very good. Thanks to both of you. You can go sit back down. All right. Reassure. The Bible says that God will not quench a smoking flax. When your student is only beginning to grasp something as you're getting their attention, don't leave them behind just because of that. And so on. All right. Sell your subject. Jesus was sitting on that well. The woman was coming there. She was already thirsty. And so Jesus started the conversation by talking about water. What do thirsty people want? They want water. Okay? So sell your subject. Stir curiosity. I have tried this before, and I hope that I'm trying it a little bit here with you all. Has anybody wondered what this stuff on the table's for? I hope you're getting curious about that. We're going to get there, okay? But the point is sometimes just having something out of the ordinary in the classroom just to get your students' attention, it gets them curious. They want to know what's going on here. And children are naturally curious. They want to know, and we want to tell them, right? So get their attention just by making them curious. I'm actually opening presents there. And you can see just how interested those children are. That I have their full attention. Jesus was sitting there on the well. And what made the lady curious about him? He wanted a drink, but he talked to her. And he was a Jew and she was a Samaritan. That's one thing. But also he asked for a drink, he was here at the well to get a drink. And he didn't have a cup. She was curious. She's wondering why. First, this Jew sitting here talking to a Samaritan. He wants a drink, but he doesn't have a cup. She's curious. She wants to know what's going on. All right. I'm sorry. So, in stirring curiosity, use the board. I hope you all noticed that there's some things on the board. And we'll get to what they're there for. Those are also there to stir your curiosity. I typically won't start a school day without something on my board that my students aren't quite sure what it's there for. And they'll come into my schoolroom. That's for our lesson. Oh, they'll try to figure it out. Guess at it. Use objects without explaining them. Does anyone know why I have this orange here? Anyone know why this orange is here?
To teach us about curiosity.
Teach you about curiosity? Start. That's a good start. It's more than that, though. Does anyone see anything on the board that has to do with this orange?
Geometry.
Geometry. What?
Circles.
Circles? You're getting closer. Sphere? He's getting really close. Does anybody else know what? There's a Yes, surface area of a sphere. Thank you for that. You are welcome to come on up here now. Congratulations to him. Does anyone know why he got that idea? Can you explain to the others?
I think the formula here at the top.
Yes, the formula.
R cubed is...
Does anyone know what pi times radius squared is? Pi times radius squared is this area of a circle. That's right. Okay, so I'm going to take this orange and slice it in half. And when you slice an orange in half, each of those halves, the flat part of it is a what? Circle. Now, if you took a piece of paper and cut it big enough to... I actually wrote the wrong formula up there. It's supposed to be 4 pi r squared instead of cubed. Sorry. Let's change that. Bad teacher, no donut. We got to get this straight. All right, there we go. So if you took 4 pieces of paper that were cut to fit the circle of this orange, you could cover the outside of the orange. The formula for the outside of a sphere is, go ahead and say the formula.
The outside of a sphere.
Yes.
4 pi r squared.
Yes. And he'll never forget that now, right? Okay. And now just to make really sure that he doesn't forget it, congratulations. You can go back to your seat and enjoy part of an orange.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome. Use stories without ending them. So, I used to work on a turkey farm, and I had this big truck that I would use to haul turkey litter to different farms in the area. I left the farm one day, and there was this huge hill, and you came down the hill, and at the bottom of the hill, there was a T-junction with a big woods on the other side. And I came down over the top of the hill, tapped my brakes, and my foot went to the floor. No brakes. Right. And I have a friend from the Philippines. His name is Rico, and he's building a house. And so on. Okay, so see, y'all want to know what's going on next, right? I've got your attention, I hope. All right, so use pictures without explaining them. Does anyone know what this is? Anyone know what this triangle and circle are? Remember my friend Rico? That's him. Okay. Use misquotes, but make them obvious. So my wife and I were baking cookies last night, and we were mixing them, I put 2 cups of salt in there, and we were... Thank you. We had some bakery ladies around here, too. I might have put 2 what of salt in there? 2 teaspoons, maybe, but not cups, right? Students really like to connect the teacher, okay? When the teacher makes a mistake, they like to connect him, and so on.
Correct.
Thank you. You would be shocked at how what your students will do with that. If they're just kind of, their attention's waning a little bit, just, off the wall, mispronounce something or say something that, whoa, you are wrong. That's not the way it is. And you've got their attention and you're ready to go on with life. Okay? So, also use some unpredictability. So put your heads down and your thumbs up, please. All right, you can look up now. Trust me, your students enjoy it when this kind of thing happens. And you'll have their attention for quite a while. I'm trying to get them back there. All right. The people in the back, if you want some, you got to come and get it. Okay. Use sizzle. Okay, some of teaching is just simply being enthusiastic and excited about what you're talking about. And so on. And you want to sell your sizzle. So, does anyone remember what our takeaway is for this morning? Let me get it started for you. The teacher Very good. Jaden, you get to come up here, please. We're going to see if Jaden can be enthusiastic in there. So just repeat the takeaway very enthusiastically, please.
The teacher is responsible to be enthusiastic.
Cause the student to learn.
The teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Thank you. You may sit back down. Actually, you know what? You get some extra candy. What kind do you want here?
I've got plenty of it.
Okay. Very good. All right. Now, has anyone noticed this bottle of Mountain Dew? Can everyone see it? Okay. This has very little to do with my topic, but I like to do this because it gets your attention. Okay. Now, I need a volunteer. I'm going to pick on one of the ladies almost in the back row there, the one wearing a green sweater. Right there. Go ahead and come on up here, please. Now, we have here a bottle of Mountain Dew. You saw me just open it. I have done nothing special to this bottle of Mountain Dew. I'm going to hand you a few raisins. All right. Be brave and just drop them in there one by one. Okay. Wait a minute. She put them down, didn't she? Don't raisins sink? You can sit back down. If you want some candy, you can help yourself while you're up here. Yeah. Get whatever you like there. I hope there's something you like. You're welcome. Thank you for helping. This is sizzle, okay? It really doesn't have anything to do with teaching students aside from keeping their attention. I did this with my students last year. The reaction lasts for almost 8 hours. And so that I can have your attention instead of the bottle of Mountain Dew, I'm going to show you something really neat here. You put the lid on and the reaction stops, okay? They'll keep going for a little bit there, but I do need you to pay attention to me again for a little bit. Do you have any questions? Anybody? Yes?
I'd like to remark about active posture, but does active posture have to be moving around?
Like, no.
I know a good teacher, a very excellent teacher, who confined himself mostly to a stool while he's teaching, but he's still so active in his posture.
Yes.
Engagement with students that he has some physical difficulties.
That is perfectly fine. We've got Lloyd right here, who uses very active posture from a wheelchair. But for most of the rest of us, I would say your knees or your feet. But the seat of your pants or dresses should never be getting worn out. Any other comments? If not, we need to keep moving here. So build need. Now, if I was a whale, and unless you missed the joke there, my name's Jonah. I'm not ever going to be a whale, but I might actually end up inside one. Whales need what? Whales need a lot of something. What do they need?
Air.
Air, yes. Although I haven't seen very many whales floating through the air. That would be really scary. Okay. They do. You're right. But what they need more than air is
water.
They need lots of water. Large areas of water. Jesus, when he was talking to that woman at the well, she was thirsty. She wanted water, and Jesus said, "I have living water." And she said, "Huh, I want that. Yeah. You need to get your students to want what you've got. Build the need in them. Display the value of what you're teaching. For example, there was a teacher who was trying to teach her students personal hygiene. She wanted them to take good care of their bodies. She was struggling with this, and one morning they showed up late for school. She said, "Why are you late for school?" They said, "Because the bus driver got stuck in the ditch." She said, "Why did he get stuck in the ditch?" "Well, because he was turning around, and the road was snowy." She said, "Why was he turning around?" "Well, because he forgot his false teeth." And she said, "And that is why you should always brush your teeth." Okay? So now there was a need in those students, and she taught out of that. You've got to get that need going on. You can describe the need. So I enjoy teaching science concepts to my students and so on. And one school year, we were all there cleaning the schoolroom, and they shampooed the rug in the schoolroom, and my students were helping carry desks down from a storage building, and they all excitedly asked if they can carry the desks into the schoolroom. And I said, "Sure, yeah. Go ahead and take them and put them in there." So we put them in there, and the next morning I showed up, and does anyone know what I found? Found a rust ring around the bottom of every hoof of every desk, because that carpet was still wet. It was a wonderful opportunity for me to teach them why you should study science, because scrubbing rust rings out of a carpet is really hard, okay? Had we just stopped and thought about it, if you put, you know, metal on something wet, it rusts, we wouldn't have put those desks in that schoolroom. Direct the students to watch for things. For instance, we have an eclipse coming up, and if you get a chance, please try to view that. Tonight, if the sky is clear, you should be able to see quite a few meteorites. We're right in the middle of a decent meteor shower right now. And so on. Sell your introduction. You should memorize the first few lines of what you're going to say. You shouldn't, when your students come up to class table, don't expect them to be paying attention if you're opening your book. And let's see, are we on page, 422. What's today's lesson? Be ready to fire something at them right away, whether it's a question or a fact about something you're going to be teaching them. So sometimes it can be something that is just about what you're teaching. For example, if you're teaching math, you might have them come up and just ask them to count backwards from 100 right away. If you can't find your place in your book, but it's you're engaging them, you're getting their attention, you're getting your introduction started. Or ask them a simple question at the beginning of an English lesson, such as, what is a noun? So what is a noun? Person, place, thing, idea. Thank you. Very good. Monitor your student focus. A teacher should command versus demand attention. Honey, you got to pay attention back there, okay? You can't be looking around now. That's not the way to get your students' attention. It's not going to be very effective. You're better off doing something that will keep their attention, where they're going to be paying attention to you, that they're so scared they're going to miss something that they just want to watch and see what's going to happen next. Okay? Make it personal. So once I found out that some of the ladies here worked in a bakery, I wanted to make sure that some of my examples had things to do with cups and teacups and so on. And I also heard some of the men were involved in them, electrical work and so on. So does anyone know how many volts you lose per foot of 12-gauge wire? It's actually very simple. If I'm correct, you lose 1 volt for every 12 feet on a 12-2 wire. You can look that up on me. But being able to find something that your students are interested in and then find even just a little fact like that. Brother Jonathan talked yesterday a little bit about studying about diesel engines for students who are interested in diesels and so on. So make it personal to your students. Your introduction needs to be familiar. This is a student mixing pancakes. This was familiar to him. He helps make pancakes at home sometimes. So this was an engaging activity for him. Use review to start most of your lessons. You're going to begin by asking them a question about something that you know they already know. For instance, this morning's topic was about give me an understanding heart. Thank you. So we have to start with what the students already know, known facts. So all quetchals are shipes, and some shipes are zortes. So are all quetchals zortes? Now, does anybody, your students feel like this sometimes, okay? So let's try this. If quetchals are Newfoundland dogs, if you know what those are, and all Newfoundlands are dogs or shipes, and some shipes or dogs are poodles, are all Newfoundlands poodles? No. See what happened? When I got to something that you already know, then you can understand it. You get the problem. So make sure that you're doing that with your students, that you start where they know, and then we go to the next thing. Make sure you start with your student's level of mastery. And this is something that's going to be hard for first-year teachers. You're going to have to figure out just how much your students know in the first couple of weeks, because you can't start teaching them above the level that they already know. It just won't work. You can't do that. Use the student. Use their names in a story. So, for example, if we're talking about this math problem up here, I might say, Cassie is mixing a cake, and she needs 2.5 cups of flour, and she wants to increase it, so she's going to add 1 3/4. And Cassie suddenly is very engaged in what I'm talking about, because I used her name. Okay, she's part of it. Use a student's home life. So if at home they're on a farm, talk about the farm. If their dad is a carpenter, talk about carpentry work. Use whatever they're familiar with. Use their animals. If you know their dog's name, talk about their dog. If you know what they play with at home, if they like their bicycle or whatever it is, talk about their bike. If you know what chores they do when they're at home, use those too. I've been surprised how many object lessons I can take from washing dishes. Just try it sometime. Your introduction has to be presented until it's bitten. So you need to use lecture. That's the normal way we start. So direct object is a word that receives the action of a transitive verb. Okay, that's lecture when I just say it like that. Use discussion. Can you give me a sentence that has a direct object in it?
Snakes bite people.
Snakes bite people. Thank you. All right. Now we took it from just a lecture to a discussion. Lloyd feels like he's involved here because he made up a sentence, and I congratulate him for that. Use visual aids. If you notice, this teacher is a better lower grade teacher than I am. She's got all sorts of visual aids up here all over her classroom. Even these numbers up on the board to show them how to make numbers and so on. Visual aids are good. And visual aids don't have to be stuff on your wall. They can be something as simple as gravel. I have taught students addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division with gravel. And I suppose most of you will probably have gravel at your school. Okay, if you have a student that just can't figure it out, it's shocking how much they can learn with 10 pieces of gravel on their desk. Okay, and it's just a visual aid for your students. Use the 5 senses. So I think we often forget that students have 5 of them. We think they only have 1, and we suspect that they're supposed to learn by just hearing. Okay, we should have them hear and see. Well, that's just 2 of 5 senses. Whenever possible, we should use a 3rd or 4th or even 5th of them. Have them touch or feel things. So if I want you to experience the sphere and see how a sphere feels, and I would walk over and say, see, that's a sphere. You can hold that, and you can hold it up and scratch it a little bit with your fingernail and then sniff it. Okay? And then if we wanted to get really far, we cut it in half and he takes a bite. That's 5 senses we use right there. So he saw, heard, felt, smelled, and tasted. Right? Use that whenever possible. So I need 4 volunteers. I think I'm going to pick on the 3rd bench right here so you 4 boys can all come up here. So when teaching fractions, I have found the banana to be a wonderful piece of equipment. It was, I think, intentionally designed by God to teach fractions. So this is one what banana? Anybody? One whole banana. Okay, I need you 4 to come up here. I'm going to actually turn my back to the crowd. You all stand right there. All right, and now we have 2 halves of a banana. All right. Now we have 4 quarters. Now here's where you all get involved. You each grab a napkin. All right. And a piece of banana. Go ahead and peel your banana real quickly. Once your banana's peeled, go ahead and split it into the 3 parts that the banana normally goes into. If you're not sure how to do that, just kind of put your finger in the end of it, and usually it kind of splits apart. It's okay if it doesn't come apart perfectly. All right, now we have 12 of a banana, and these 4 young men get to take their napkins and their bananas back to their seat with them, and each of them gets to eat 1/4 of a banana. So use the students' five senses, and please don't forget they have five, okay? Use imagination. You can pretend with your students, especially if they're younger students, tell them a story, or use substitution. So I need three people. Let's see, I'm going to pick on the Seth and the rest of them right there. If you all can come up and just stand right here. We're going to change their names for a little bit. We're talking about direct objects still, okay? So this is Tom, and this is a predicate. This is hit, and this is Dan, okay? So this is the subject, predicate, direct object. So Tom, hit, Dan. So Tom, you can go ahead and hit Dan. Whoa, he meant that one. All right. Now, do you think that this guy is going to forget what it's like to be a direct object? Probably not. Okay. You all may sit back down. Actually, you can get a piece of candy while you're up here, so you have something to eat back there. Thank you for taking part. Students love that kind of thing. They want to be involved in their own learning. All right, you're up. Questions? Anyone? Comments? I'm talking too much here. Go ahead.
Can you do that every class?
No, these are not. By the way, this is an overstimulating class. You will not have every school baby like this class, okay? Don't try it. Your students will become nervous wrecks. Okay? This is a class for you to take things from and spread them out over your whole year, I hope. Okay. Lloyd.
I've often thought as a teacher, it's just always good to keep the students guessing a little bit.
Yes, a little bit. Yes.
But I know in some of my classes, this is even at the high school level, I'll be writing something on the board and I'll deliberately misspell something.
Mm-hmm.
Or add, like in Mississippi, an extra couple S's and a couple I's. See if
you're watching. Yes.
And
yes. Yes. Students like it if you treat them as if they're paying attention, even if they aren't. Okay? All right, we need to keep moving. The bite or the explanation must be, I already mentioned this, but I'm going to say it again because it's so important, must be tied to as many known facts as possible. You must keep their attention. So we did a whole bunch of things to get the students' attention. Now we're going to keep their attention. Once again, use the board. Use diagrams. So remember Rico, who was building his house? Okay. Well, Rico's house is up on poles because in the Philippines it floods often. And on one side of his house, he has four poles. On the other end is three poles, and there's going to be a pole everywhere. How many poles does Rico need to hold up his house? 12, thank you. But a diagram made that very easy. If I had just told you that problem, you would have gotten pretty confused very quickly, right? All right, use pictures. For example, if I was talking about a house with a hip roof, I would just simply draw... a hip roof for you. It doesn't take a lot. You don't have to be an artist to do that. Use objects. We already talked about the orange, the banana. Use figurative speech. Students do learn by figurative speech. For example, we say that this is like a, similar to. You're taking them from what they already know to something that they don't know. So use figurative speech. Use examples. So mother is baking a pie, and she puts 13 cups of butter into the pie batter, and...
I'm not sure what she put in, but it's way too much butter.
It was way too much butter, yes. All right, very good. All right, your explanation, you've got the student's attention, you're trying to keep it. And you got to reel it in or limit what they're thinking about. So let's just say we got them thinking about direct objects. And they start just thinking about every sentence in the English language that they could make up that's got a direct object in it. Okay, they're going to thermonuclear overload if they do that. Okay, so you got to kind of pull this thing, start reeling them back in a little bit. Give them something to do with it. For example, with a flashlight. If you give your students a flashlight, pretty soon they will just be flashing it around and everything. Okay, and you tell them, no, you use a flashlight when it's dark. Okay, and so, you know, as soon as it gets dark outside, they're flashing it all over the place. And you say, no, you use it to see where you're going. and everything. So they're driving down the road with their mom and dad, and they got the flashlight out the window to see where they're going. You know? You have to keep limiting this thing down to where they're actually using it for what its intended purpose is. That's what we're talking about. All right. So we need to demonstrate the process. So, for instance, we've talked about direct objects, and then we're going to say to diagram this sentence, Tom hit Dan, you put your baseline, subject-predicate line, and then you use a straight line right here to separate the predicate from the direct object. I just demonstrated the process for you there. And then you want them to go ahead and practice that. So you want to show them what to do, how to do it, and as often as possible, you want to let them guess at why you do things. So lead your students. Have problems for them to attempt or discuss, and then involve the students. So would anyone like to come up and try to diagram this sentence down here? I wish Jay was in this, because I was going to try to have him diagram that one. Anyone want to volunteer to diagram that sentence? To climb to the peak is to be foolish? Is to be, yeah, foolish. You would diagram it for us? You think so? Go ahead and come on up. While he's diagramming, I'm going to keep talking. So ask questions. So what is the subject of that sentence, by the way?
To climb to the peak.
To climb to the peak. All right, what is the predicate? Is. And what is the rest of the sentence?
Predicate noun to
infinitive.
Used as a
pronominative.
Yes, infinitive used as a predicate nominative. And he is doing it correctly. Oops. Close. I want to tell you something. If you have a linking verb, we always use a leaning line. All right. Good job. Excellent work. Thank you for being willing to take a stab at it.
It's about to be.
It's the same as. It's the same.
Like that.
Thank you. All right. So your students get involved. They feel like they're part of what's happening. That's part of your explanation. Master the minimum. Master the smallest chunk of things that you need to teach your students. Make whatever you're teaching as bite-sized as possible. When you're teaching students, they have about 1 minute of attention span for every year of their age. So if you're teaching first graders, we're talking about 7 minutes of class time and you're done. Or else you better shift gears. They're not going to be listening to you anymore. Or even if they're listening, they're forgetting what they heard at first because you've passed their ability. Limit your points to three or fewer and give a takeaway. The shorter, the better. For example, today's takeaway could just simply be cause learning. Okay? Or if we're teaching about nouns, we could just tell our students what you need to remember is that nouns name. That's all you have to know. You know that, you're going to be just fine. Okay? So cause learning. You remember that, you're going to be a good teacher. All right? Must be netted. We're really into fishing. We get it close to the boat and we get it in the net. Teach to satisfy your students' need. Remember we talked about building need in our students? Jesus did this. And then he filled that woman at the well's need. Teach until the lights come on. And then just a little bit more. That woman finally understood that Jesus was talking about something spiritual. And then Jesus kept teaching just a little bit more. Teach until your student is working the concept. That woman at the well went back into that town and spread the word about Jesus. She was working the concept of living water. Once your students are doing that, your presentation is over. Your job isn't done, but your presentation is over. All right, any questions, comments? We'll keep moving. The catch. This is the most important part of a presentation. This is the point at which your student has the knowledge, you've gotten their attention, you kept their attention, they actually know something now, but now they need to apply it, put it to work. This is what we call equipping students. This is what teachers do. We're getting them ready for service in God's kingdom, right? So we need to teach them to apply knowledge. Jesus inspired change. Those people in the town that woman at the well lived at, their lives changed in 2 days. Jesus stayed there for 2 days, and I don't think that town was the same place from then on. So it must be practiced. You need to balance application with information. In other words, most of your classes should be only about half of you talking, and the other half should be your students practicing. All right? So I'm going to have the, one, two, three, fourth row with Jennifer. Go ahead and come up here and just practice turning around, smiling, and then reciting the takeaway for today, which is the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. So just quickly do that for me. Because unless I can get you all to present properly, that's good.
Can we say it together?
You can say it together. Thank you for smiling. Yes. Very good. You may sit back down. But they've got to practice. Your students need practice. Working equals learning. Repetition equals learning. And typically something needs to be repeated 8 times until your students will actually remember it. We're getting close to that with our takeaway for today. Applying equals learning. When your students are applying the knowledge that you've given them, they're learning. And the more realistic it is, the better. The more it supplies your students' need, the better. In other words, if you teach a student who's a farmer something that he can use at home on the farm, he's not going to forget it. He'll go home and say, "Dad, I can calculate those mixtures of the feed tonight. I know how to do that. My teacher taught me how to use equations," and so on. As they're applying, often students need correction. Jesus corrected gently. A woman at the well was sitting there with him, and she was all excited about this living water, and Jesus said, "Go call your husband." Oops, problemo here. She kind of eased up on that one. Last night, Brother Jay talked about correcting gently that man who was saying interest. Okay. Correction needs to be given gently as a rule. Give constructive criticism. Jesus criticized that woman at the well for her own good, not to make himself feel better. But he said, "Where's your husband?" Because she needed to recognize in her own mind that she had a problem. It was for her own good. Allow your students to struggle. When you come to a student's desk and their paper is covered with eraser smudges, I love that. Because I know they're trying, they're struggling. And the question you should ask is, what is wrong? And you'll be surprised sometimes at how close they are to knowing already. They're almost there. Let them struggle. Part of the learning is that work that is involved in it. Use challenge. Think about Joshua. He said, "As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." It's up to you guys what you want to do. Elijah said, "I'm going to serve God. It's up to the rest of you people whether you want to keep serving Baal. He doesn't have any fire, you know," and so on. All right? So it must be reviewed. So we present jingles or acronyms. So for commas, I tell my students, when in doubt, leave them out. Does anyone know where we need commas in this sentence and this sentence? You teach a student about commas, and they tend to get carried away. And so they'll put a comma here, 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 here, and they think they're done. And you tell them, "No, you know what, I'm from the Midwest. That was one person, okay? And I have Amish friends. That's one person, too. She's actually here today, okay? And this is one person as well." So there actually were only 4 of us who went to WFTI. All right. Does anyone know where the comma belongs in this sentence? This is where you start teaching your students that commas are important. All right. "A bad man you are, not a good friend." And you say, "No, that's not the right place. Let's put it right over here. A bad man you are not, a good friend." Totally changes the meaning. or for distance, rate, and time. I tell my children, if you have distance, you divide. It's that simple. Rather than learning three formulas, they learn one. And it makes it, reduces that down to something they can remember. Drill the hard parts. Jonathan Erb is planning to talk to you all about pitfalls tomorrow. I'll let him deal with that as far as teaching goes. Review directions. So, and you, as your students are heading back to their desks to do their homework, ask them, do you understand? Do you all understand what presentation is about? Are you getting it? Do you feel like we've gotten somewhere? I hope. You're not just going to teach the way you were taught? Okay. Repeat the takeaway. So Jesus, the woman at the well had come there seeking this living water, and Jesus gave her three words before she went back. Does anybody know what those three words were? He said, I am he. That was it. That was all she had to remember. She said, we're looking for the Messiah and all this. And Jesus just said, I am he. Keep it simple. Give them something easy to take away. So we want to repeat the takeaway again. I'm going to have Jerry and the bench behind him come on up here and repeat the takeaway. That the teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn. So you four men can just come up here if you would, please. As they're coming, if you have questions, please be ready to fire them at me. We're getting close to the end of our session here. You can do it together or individually.
The teacher is responsible to cause the students to learn.
Very good. Thank you. You all may be seated. Questions? Comments? I would like to demonstrate one last thing to you, and that is that occasionally a student may seem to really struggle with paying attention, and one of the best things to do when that takes place is to physically get close to that student and get on their level.
That teacher is responsible to cause the student to learn.
Yeah.
That was very personal. Okay, I wouldn't do that to just anybody, but to your students, you need to be comfortable doing that, getting into their personal space. It's okay to go ahead and get in the student's space and say, okay, now, what were you thinking when you wrote this down? Okay. That's fine. Being personal and getting into their space, teachers have that right. It's part of presentation. It's part of getting their attention. It's okay. Don't do that, once again, every day, all day. Otherwise, your students are going to be asking you to brush your teeth more often. Once again, every presentation has three basic parts. Anyone want to help me with this? What are the three basic parts of a presentation? Introduction or the bait. What does that do? Gets their attention. Okay. The next part is the bite or the
explanation.
And the purpose of that is to keep their attention. The third part, most important part, please, is the catch or the application. And who is applying, by the way? The student is the one applying. And that point, what are you trying to do? You're trying to guide their attention. Our takeaway for today: the teacher is responsible to cause a student to learn. Anything else? Any other questions, comments you have to add? If not, thank you for your attention. Cause your students to learn, and you'll be a blessing to many more people than there are here today. Thank you.